Hi, I'm Leigh Hines, and this is How to Fall Apart, a podcast about picking up pieces. My guest today is Nadia Ford. We talked about her parents' separation when she was seven, her subsequent estrangement from her mother, how she coped when her mum was diagnosed with terminal cancer, letting go and accepting that their relationship would never be what she hoped it would, body shaming, and becoming a mother herself. Thank you for listening, and thank you as always to Cassie for her production. Well, we start talking about your parents' separation when you were seven. And you said you can remember that really clearly.
Very clearly. It was happening in the background, obviously, for quite a while before I realised what was going on. And then the for sale sign went up outside our family home. And I was like, what's that about?
Really?
That was the conversation.
Okay.
And then, now that I look back, there was definitely a couple of days of arguments. And now I'm like, oh, that's the day that happened. Oh, that's the day that... But when you're young and you just don't really understand... you don't understand the world the way an adult does, I guess. So I just wasn't... Now that I look back, I can really pinpoint it. But yeah, that day where the for sale sign went up was the... when you know you've lost your safe space. I didn't understand why my dad was moving out.
Yeah.
Where is he going?
Yeah.
You know, why is he not here anymore? And also as well, I was very like, a lot of my family members were with myself and my brother.
Okay.
Neither of them were around as much.
Yeah, your parents.
No, like in a, that was really, to be honest, the last time that my mum and dad were like primary carers, if you get me. So I think there was like a shift into like other family members kind of being involved in the day to day. So I think.
Can you describe or can you remember what that seemed like to a 7 year old? Like your whole world just kind of.
Just scary.
Yeah.
Really scary and didn't really understand. And also I was overhearing things like affair. You know, all these kind of things that like, and I'm like, oh, that's what it was. Or but obviously not having the kind of understanding as an adult of what it was. So I actually knew from the very early stage, I knew the reason why they were breaking up. I knew why they weren't living together anymore. But I probably didn't have understanding until I was way older to understand like the betrayal or whatever that was. But there was no, for my experience anyway, I was very open to what was like, there was no secrets as far as like, I was told what it meant, what this thing had happened. And I don't know, maybe like, I don't know if I was to go back, if I don't know if I was to be in that, maybe in that position myself, I don't know if I would go into the details. I don't know, but maybe I remember being that young and knowing what an affair was.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Or like, all these kind of things.
We were talking there just before about that sense of like a safety that you didn't know you had been taken away. Was that?
It's just like you're just very aware that you're going into a new world and you don't know what that's going to look like. And I was like a really happy, happy kid, really happy, loved my mum and dad so much and didn't know anything else. So I just knew there was like uncertainty and I knew something had shifted massively. I just don't know if I could comprehend what that was. And but I was really, really aware of it.
Do you think looking back now that it... do you see ways in which it compromised your ability to form attachments then? In as you maybe as a teenager and as you
massively. I think I was so just scrambling to get that family unit back together until really I got my own family again. I don't think there was any point in my life where I felt that like I got married this year, and there definitely was a full circle moment of it. And I don't know maybe that you're saying it to me now, I don't think I was very aware of it, but I think I was really scrambling to make that. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I don't really know how to describe it in a good way. I think I just really wanted, my family back.
Mm.
Really, really, really wanted them back.
Mm.
And I also feel like every year that it happened, like, so at the time, the divorce took 10 years to be finalized.
Okay.
So if you think, you know, 7 to 17, it's a big, big difference of,
yeah,
you know, so by the time I was 17, I was like, oh, that thing happened. Okay.
Mm.
I kind of knew my life longer without them living together.
Mm.
Why did it take so long? And it was a very bitter, bitter breakup.
Mm-hmm.
Very bitter. And it was just one or the other. And there was no, there was no even space between us. There was, absolutely not, like, it was not amicable at all. So I think that made it challenging as well. And not just, like, just from family point of view, like, not just the two people involved, like, families and get pitted against each other, because obviously, you know, my grandmother's coming from a place of, it's her daughter, or my dad's family are going to be on his side.
Yeah, so everything's so heightened.
Yeah, so it's coming from everybody.
Yeah.
It's not just the two people involved.
Mm.
And I think as well, like, as I got older, I stopped listening to what each team or each party was saying about each other. And I just made my own judgment on it, or made my own mind up about the scenario.
Yeah.
As, like, a woman.
Yeah.
Point of view. But it, that took, like, that was only, like, really when I was, like, in my late 20s and kind of that kind of time. So it was a long time of being kind of led by other people. And then as I got older, I kind of was like, okay, maybe actually, to be honest, me going through stages that my mum would have, you know, meeting people, you know, meeting in relationships, meeting somebody, you know, getting married, settling down, all that kind of stuff. As I reached those milestones, I could see, you know, what would have that been like if I was like her, what she went through.
And how was that? Did you feel angry, or did you understand more, or a bit of both?
I think, it's a hard one to describe. I can see why she made some of the decisions that she did, for sure.
Mm.
I can. And then there's some I just don't get, you know?
Mm.
So, and also then I'm just like, if that happened to me, how, in my relationship now, how would I feel? It's a really tough one.
Mm.
I think I empathized with her woman to woman.
Okay.
I think I really understood the hurt that came with that I didn't understand as a kid.
Can you describe a little bit your relationship with your mother in the sense of being estranged, and then what we were kind of talking about earlier before about acceptance and kind of letting go of, okay, this is never going to be this, and that kind of thing.
Yeah, so shortly after my parents separated, my mother's family kind of took over the primary care. There was about a 10-year period where I didn't see her.
Okay.
And then even after that 10 years, it was very sporadic.
Okay.
A couple of years, and then we'd try and reconnect. And to be honest, the main kind of pull of the reconnection was that she was diagnosed with cancer.
So
that was definitely the reason that I reached out.
Mm-hmm.
So there was an estrangement for a long, long, long time.
Yeah.
And a lot of, like, formative years as well, like, where I kind of just, that was just the way it was.
Mm-hmm. She became ill.
Yeah, she became ill. So
how did you navigate that?
I went to visit her in hospital, and she didn't believe the hospital staff that she had cancer. And it was very strange, because I think I look very like her.
Okay, yeah.
And I think she hadn't seen me as a, maybe like a young adult.
Mm.
I don't know when the last time she had seen me before that. Mm. I'm sure maybe she saw pictures and stuff, but I remember a look of recognition on her face mm. when I came into the room. Just it wasn't an easy initial meeting.
Yeah.
But we were there for like a bigger reason.
Yeah.
It wasn't
yeah.
my like hurt or her hurt or whatever it was. It was like this bigger problem and at the time treatment.
Mm.
So that was the focus of the meeting.
Yeah.
So I definitely left the initial time that I went and met her again. I walked away from that kind of not feeling any kind of, I don't think there was any kind of like embrace or anything like that. It was just very like, okay, have they spoken to you about what they want to do?
Yeah.
It was very medical, like yeah. very medical. And that's kind of how it was. And actually for a long time, really until the couple of months right before she passed away,
mm.
there was friction when the subject was approached. So
when the subject of you guys not having seen of your relationship essentially.
So
so difficult because that's such an like a pressure cooker of a situation anyway when somebody is that ill.
Yes.
And then to kind of have that hovering in the background.
There was definitely a moment I walked away because for my own like self-preservation.
Yeah.
I felt like I was kind of hitting my head against a wall. So again, even in that 5 years of that she was ill, there was again long periods of time where we didn't see each other.
Yeah.
And then
that must have been very difficult because you're trying to mind yourself, but then obviously in somebody's grave, like
I was actually only talking to my husband about this a few weeks ago. I often wonder, should I have done more at that time?
No, of course not. But you absolutely did your best.
But I was trying, but it's very hard to, I don't know. I think the main kind of, breakthrough came mm-hmm. when I just stopped thinking about my hurt.
So
do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, I think that's when I was like, it's just not about me. It's about this woman who's about to lose her life with cancer and how scared she is.
Yeah.
Is she okay? What can we do to make it easier? I kind of realized that she is really struggling with this whole thing. Like, she wouldn't even call up the word cancer.
Yeah.
Right up until the end, we couldn't say the word. I think once I kind of made peace with, you know, okay, I'm not going to get the answers that I want.
Mm.
That made me, I guess, lighter going into the situation.
Yeah.
And there was no real conversation about what had happened in the past. Everything was from then onwards. And like, I had to make peace with that.
Yeah. And how was that? Did you?
I really did try and put myself in her shoes as much as I could. You know, how scary is her situation right now? How frightening is it for her? Because she was young, 49, she wasn't ready to go. She was very frustrated at her health declining.
Yeah.
And I even remember just being like, oh my God, I'm never taking my health for granted ever again. And even like the shift that it made for me as far as like self-care and all this kind of stuff. And I think when you're dealing with somebody with cancer, you realize that this horrible thing comes into your world. But it was in my world, but it was actually just taking over hers.
Yeah.
And it just was... it was like, that was what we should be up against, not each other.
Yeah.
Do you know, I think that was the big thing, was like, okay, let's try and make the best of the, you know, like, I just remember just I just remember even like right before she passed away, a few days before, we were like, I was making plans with her because she wanted to try and go and get another treatment. And I knew it was different. I knew, yeah. I knew something else, but I was not going to.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, absolutely. Of course we can.
Yeah.
It just wasn't about me or anybody else. It was about her. It was like a young woman,
yeah,
you know, and it was just really sad. It was really, really sad. And even after she passed away, I remember saying to one of my friends, like, I would do anything for her to have her life back, even if she never wanted to speak to me again, just to know that she's alive. I wouldn't, I don't care. Like, even if she was like, I'm going to live, but Nadia, don't ever come. I would have taken that. And I was so sad for her, you know, watching somebody go through that. You know, cancer is not easy. It's not an easy disease.
No, and it's not. No, it's not.
It really takes over your body. And I was so sad. I was just so sad to watch her just lose everything, you know, lose absolutely everything. Mm. So.
When she passed away then, how... We were talking about how grief is different for everyone. What was that like? Because there were kind of several different ways you were grieving, I suppose. Or, you know, you were...
So I definitely made a decision to myself that, you know, I wasn't going to let this happen and me learn nothing.
Yeah. Okay.
So, you know, obviously... The great thing, the dream scenario would be for not to happen.
Yeah.
But that is out of my control.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to do everything in my power to look after myself, to make sure my health is good, to make sure my relationships with people are good, to make sure that I don't hang on to any resentment, anger, anything. Like, it was just like, okay, how do I learn all of these lessons and like apply them to my life? And it was just a light switch moment. I can't even describe. It was like, because I was with her when she passed away, there is like it's different. Life is just, the minute you just take your eyes out of that room and you're like, walk back outside, it's just, life is different. It's never the same ever again. And it definitely made me like, you know, prioritize, yeah, you know. And I think that's when my self-care became priority,
yes,
as well.
Yeah. And that sense of, did it help in the sense of kind of coming to accept, okay, my relationship with my parents, with my mother, it was never, it, you know, like, how did you get to that acceptance of it's not going to be ever what I would have wanted it to be, and I need to just let go of...
Like, I can't change it and I can't control it now. And I just had to let it go, because otherwise, if I was going to carry on in life hanging on to all that, that's just going to eat me up.
So it's almost like realizing there's a bit of a scales here, and I can either carry, like, not let it go and carry the frustration and the upset, or I can let it go and that goes.
I just felt like there was... Like, what is the point? What is the point in hanging on to all of this anger and resentment and sadness and, you know, and because, like, whatever time I have left, I'm not letting that eat away at that either. And, you know, I think when you see somebody pass away, life is, you know, it's finite.
Yeah, it feels like it's like an extreme form of logic where you're literally like, what is the point? Like,
exactly.
It's not even emotional. It's like...
And it applied to every
one
part
plus
of
one
my
equals
life.
To, yeah.
It applied to everything. You know, work, like day to day, my routine, being, you know, my relationships, my friendships, everything. It was just like a blanket of... What is the point?
Yeah. Well, I think as well, because once you... No, I totally get... Because I think as well, if you do it with something big where you're like, okay, I'm just going to let go of the struggle of trying to make this into something that it's not. And then you get the kind of relief that comes with that. Then you start applying that to smaller parts of your life, because that muscle memory or whatever of the relief, it's like, oh, if I worked there, it'll, do you know, and it kind of echoes then throughout other parts, exactly like you're describing.
You know, I think, you know, you can't, the thing is you can't control people, and all you can control is yourself and how you react. And I just made sure that that's what I concentrated on. Even in the smallest kind of you know, interactions with people I never even knew. You know, you meet someone who's having like extreme road rage or something, and I'm like, oh geez, you know, and move on. Like, you know, I didn't get wound up. Now obviously it's an ongoing process. I still have moments where I go, oh, you know, I'm on edge or whatever. But I just kind of recheck myself, and I'm like, okay, this is not worth it. You know, or like I was saying to you earlier this morning, like, you know, I felt like, oh, I haven't really had a lot of time for me, like, in the last few days. I went and I did a yoga class this morning, and I feel so much better for it.
Because you're aware of how you want to be feeling, so you know when you're not feeling
all the time.
Like that.
All the time. So just taking that hour out or hour and a half, whatever it might be, going to the gym, making sure I'm eating well, like nourishing myself, my body, and not taking that for granted. You know, that was a big thing as well, like after my mum passed away, like not taking my body for granted and not taking my health for granted and doing everything. You know, now to be honest, my nana's like, you take it to an extreme, Nadia. But I just feel like I want to be feeling the best that I can every day. And I'm going to do what I can to feel like that.
Can we talk about how grief felt in the... I mean, it's 5 years now, and you said you'd had a bad day just the other day. But in the first few months, so you were grieving the loss of your mum, but were you also, like, did it hit the loss of the relationship that you'd never had?
No, I think that happens now. I think I reflect now on that and go, oh, I wish it had been different.
Okay.
At the time, I was just so... heartbroken for this woman. I was so heartbroken for her, and so just like, you know, one of my best friends got married a couple of days after she passed away.
I remember that.
That was tough. And I went, and I didn't stay for the dinner, I just went for the ceremony. And I just remember being like, how are people happy? Do you know what I mean? Like, and I was so excited for my friend, and I was helping her put her veil on, and I was doing everything. But it was just like, oh my God, guys, like, people die, you know, like something so simple. Like, I just remember this kind of, you know, why are people laughing? But obviously I was so... I was like feeling like that, but then also so happy for my friend as well. And just like, this is such a special moment for her. And, you know, she's so excited, and such an emotional day on it, and like good emotions, like positive emotions. And, but yeah, I was just kind of like, I definitely like a bit of a, I don't really remember it. And it was a bit of a blur.
It's a lot to carry as well, to feel. Not that when anyone dies, like, but you know, if somebody dies at the end of a long life, it is different. It's a lot to carry for a parent when you feel sad for them that, you know, for
so much life unlived. For sure. And I think there was, you know, a lot of moments of realization for my mum before she passed away, maybe on her own kind of life. And I was just so sad that at the last. Why did it take till then? And I think that's another takeaway for me that I took from it.
And has that gotten easier to carry now? Or
I think grief is something that you take with you throughout your whole life. And the only thing that, you know, you just have to kind of check in. Don't get me wrong. It's not it's not an everyday thing I'm battling right now, but it's something that I have to take a moment. Sometimes it hits me like a wave out of nowhere. Especially, you know, having a baby and stuff like that, you know, brings like pregnancy or that kind of stuff brings it up. But I just think I try and just do a positive outlook on it, as far as like the changes I can make from it. I think that's my way of coping with it, and it has been for the last couple of years. So like, you know, for example, like with my daughter, I am nearly scared to not be there for her.
Are you?
Yeah. You know, so I am kind of like, you know, does she know I love her all the time? You know, this kind of thing, like, oh, they kind of maybe to an extreme, you know? So I think my way of dealing with grief is learning what I can from it and just applying the changes. I think that's just life. You're just living life like that. You know, what can I learn? How can I change this?
Had you met Tom when your mum...
Just before my mum died.
Okay.
Yes.
Wow. So you were in a new relationship and you were going through all of that.
He was amazing. Yeah. He was amazing.
That's not easy at all.
He actually lost his mum when he was 12. So I think that helped. Yeah.
Okay.
I think he just let me have my bad days. And, okay. He was just very kind of... solid, you know, solid. And when you're a bit erratic, you know what I mean?
Great to have someone you feel you can trust.
But he's like that in life in general. Yes. He's like a solid. Yeah.
Did you guys go to Japan? Was it shortly after?
Shortly after.
So you basically took kind of time out from.
I did, from life.
Yeah. Was that scary being like self-employed?
No, I needed it. Okay. I needed it. I actually walked away from a lot.
Yeah.
I remember being really scared to say to my agent in London, I need to go, but they had seen how bad I was.
Okay.
And I just said, look, you know, I'm going to go. And he totally understood. This is my agent I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Totally understood and was so supportive and was like, listen, you take all the time you need, reassess and come back.
Okay. And when you stopped, what did it feel like? Because sometimes it can really crash.
Well,
in.
I think Japan of all places is like landing on a different planet. So it was actually like a rediscovery of how people live life, but they do everything different to how we do it.
Okay.
So it was kind of like seeing life again, but everything down to the toilets is different, how they get served is different, how you buy things in the shop is different, like everything is different. So it kind
of probably took you out of your mind a lot. 100%.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah. I got really into Bikram over there. I got really into yoga.
Remember that. Yeah.
Really kind of put my health as a priority when I was there. And I think the Japanese are quite like that anyway. So I was living in an environment that is quite like that. And just kind of the respect that they have for their elders and their families. It's very traditional in a lot of ways, even though it's very kind of streets ahead in like technology and stuff. It's still like there's a lot of like 1,000-year-old traditions that they do. So that was really interesting, and it was a really magical time in my life. Actually, it was a lot of soul searching and self-preservation with a really great relationship at the same time, and I think that was like the time when we knew we're gonna end up together, we're gonna get married, because we had conquered this new life in this new country.
Can I ask, did it feel, because it sounds like what you found there is like creating that safe space that we were talking about earlier, did it ever feel scary to place that in somebody else, your sense
always
of safety?
Before I met Dom.
Okay
always
never
really understood why I felt the way I did, but it wasn't right. And then when I met Dom, I just was like, oh my god. And I remember even while I was there, I got an opportunity to go on a tour, this UK tour with a wedding singer. It's a film with Adam Sandler, and it was the stage adaptation. And I really wanted to do the part. And I remember saying to him, I got off the phone. And so my agent called me and he was like, look, you know, I know this is something you'd love to do. I'm only calling you because I know it's something you'd love to do. And I was like, yeah, I'd love to do that. But I'm in Japan. And I said to Dom, and Dom was like, yeah, like, do it. Why not? And I was like, yeah, but you're here and it's back in the UK. It was going around the UK at the time, tour in the UK. And he was like, just because you're there doesn't mean that we're like any less. And I was like, oh yeah, you're right. And that was kind of the, he gave me the freedom I needed to do what I love to do. Mm. And even then I ended up getting a film straight after Wedding Singer. Mm. So I like rang Dom and I was like, so I'm not coming back when the date that we thought.
Yeah.
I'm after getting this. He was like, amazing. Good. Okay. Do it. And I think so. It's like having that solid foundation with someone that lets you fly.
Yeah.
At the same time and come back.
Mm.
Is you can't, like, it's priceless. It's so like I appreciate it so much. So I think, and then it really made me look at like what I do for work and what projects I do. You know, having the time away, coming back, what do I want to do? And also as well, like, you know, having done like I'm a Celebrity in the Jungle and stuff like that, you're putting yourself out there to be judged and like, is it worth it? You know what I mean? Like, oh no. But where, you know, something like The Wedding Singer or the tour or the, you know, being involved in a really amazing show or like, don't get me wrong, I'm a Celeb is a great show.
Yeah.
But the kind of public bashing
your
that you get.
Toll is totally different. Yeah, it is tough.
It is tough. Where when you do a play, or you do a film, you're getting judged on the work, not so much you.
It's a totally different level of self-examination.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that was a big kind of change in gears for me.
Okay.
I think that was like, I came back from Japan being like, what do I really want to work on and what makes me happy? Because again, I had lost, like I had seen somebody lose their life early.
Yeah.
So I was like, well, I'm not going to spend a second working on something I don't want to work on.
Mm.
So, That was a big shift as well.
Yeah. How do you feel now about I'm a Celebrity? Your mum was ill when you were in.
My mum hadn't passed away yet. So I went in, it was October, November they film. She passed away the following June, but it was then she was going into a hospice care. So I knew it was coming to the end.
Okay.
I love the show. Absolutely love the show. Ant and Dec are amazing. The duty of care that ITV take are incredible.
Okay.
And I loved being part of such a household show. You know, I grew up watching it. I knew all about it before I went in. And I just, my only regret about it is that I was probably grieving already when I went in, scared to do it, but obviously knew that it was a massive job and opportunity. And when I was in there, actually, one of the castmates, their brother died when we were in there. And that scared me. And that kind of knocked me off course a bit when I was in there. And mentally, I was just kind of ticking down the days then. I probably wasn't as present as I could have been. But I definitely came out like appreciating. Like if people even ask me now, you know, like, is it really like no hot water? Is there really like no food? And I'm like, no, guys, like I still appreciate hot water when I get into the shower still 5 years later, whatever it is. So it is actually its own soul searching project itself, and you see that with every series. The cast members that come out are significantly changed, you know. So I do think it did have that effect on me. But yeah, I was heartbroken in there for sure, and I was worried and sad. And
was it hard to be kind of stuck in one place with all that going on in your mind? Like, is it boring during the day? Or is there?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, like, the days are long. The days are long. Yeah. Like, feels like one day feels like 3 days.
And if that's all going on in your head, that's compounding.
And if you're not taken out for a trial or a challenge or...
You're just kind of...
You're there. You're
just sitting around kind of chatting. Yeah.
So absolutely, you get a lot of... And I actually do think that there was probably that moment of, for me, you know, I came out and I you know, kind of, maybe with my mum, just kind of like, yeah, let's just come at it from a point of like, let me help her.
Okay.
So yeah, of course there's a lot of time for soul searching in there.
Can we talk about the you said earlier there wasn't a word for it then, body shaming that you would have experienced just coming out of that?
So at the time I'd obviously gained a bit of weight, as we do through life.
Shocker.
And I came out and I remember my friend was with me, she met me when I came out, we were in the back of the car, and I actually asked her, I said, has anyone commented on it? Because I knew my body had changed, but I was so kind of trying to just survive.
Yeah.
That self-care was like at the bottom of the list of worries, you know, like I don't have time to do. I'm just trying to.
Self-care is not worrying about it that
I'm
moment.
I'm just like trying to like survive. Mm-hmm. I'm just trying to get through life right now.
Exactly.
And I think as well, like, I think, you know, when you have like physical changes, it's always kind of linked mentally and emotionally. So, you know, I definitely feel, for me anyway, when I see somebody that's physically changed, I'm like, okay, I hope they're okay. I hope they're not going through anything at the moment, because I do think they're very linked. Mm. And she said to me, yeah, there has been a couple of articles. I knew coming out what was going to happen.
What did that feel like when she said that?
I was hurt, obviously, and but like I also knew I wasn't like
you were kind of dreading it.
It's a really strange place to be in a body that people are making comments on. It's a very odd place to live. Like the anger that comes with towards your body.
Okay.
It's a lot, and you feel like I don't know, like I don't know if this is gonna make sense, but like me, who I am, like my the person I am is not my body, and being criticized and subjected to something when you're living inside it is very tough. It's very, very tough to be in that place. And, you know, it kind of maybe shook me in a way of like, okay, what is the, like, yeah, so at the time I'm going through this like kind of judgment and online comments and whatever. And again, you know, it was 5 years ago. So body shaming wasn't a thing, you know, where like now I feel like if someone was to say that, you kind of wouldn't get away with it, or it would be more an online comment, not where like I was actually having articles written by journalists about my body.
Yeah,
I had journalists asking me, so Nadia, what do you think about the weight that you've put on?
Jesus.
Like, oh cool, how are you? So
it's like being asked to kind of separate yourself, like I'm going to sit here now and do a running commentary on my own body.
Yeah, 100%.
Which is so actually knitted.
It wasn't just comments online, it was people writing articles about it as well,
as if this was a thing that was up for discussion.
Exactly. And so that was that was uncomfortable. And I think dealing with somebody who was very ill and losing their health and losing their ability to move their own body made me realize I need to look after myself. So actually the timing, I came out of it, came out of the jungle, had all the kind of criticism, and then at the same time I'm watching somebody's health decline. I think that was like the magic of okay, I need to sort myself out. Now, it turns out that it was like intolerances and allergies that I suffered with since I'm a kid, because I was always an active person.
Do you feel like the criticisms got in on you, or were you able to weather?
I just didn't. I honestly stopped looking online and I stopped reading articles about myself, because I just, unlike, and do you know what the worst thing is? It's like on Twitter, they tag you.
So
even if you don't go looking,
an asshole move when you're criticizing
even
someone.
If you don't,
I've only come fresh to Twitter in the last kind of few weeks, and I saw somebody put up a post like, if you are doing a crap review of my book, please feel free not to tag me.
Yeah, 100%. Okay. Yeah. So
excuse the language.
So even
really,
when I would avoid it, I would still see it, you know? So it's like, yeah, no, I know. Like, and to be honest, they're and now that I'm in a much healthier place, you know, mind, body, everything, like I'm in a better space in my life, I can laugh about it now. But what worries me as like, especially as a mother, I did not grow up with social media. And I really, really worry about the impact that people's comments can have on your soul. Like, there has to be something more to life than if you think somebody is a size too big, or you know, a bit of cellulite, or it doesn't look, you know,
it's just so disappointing as well that it's all so like aware of the physical. Yeah, do you know, like, it would absolutely just be lovely to get beyond that.
100%.
I can see it even with my daughter's 5 and a half, and I'm like, I do it myself, but I try to catch myself, you know, but when people comment on her physicality, she's not aware of it until we say it.
Yeah.
And just like, ugh.
And I also think with weight gain or loss, you're always the last person to realise, I think.
Yeah.
I don't know if I know when I've put on a few pounds because I'm just living in my body.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean?
Exactly.
So I'm just like,
not up for public discussion.
Yeah, so.
Shouldn't be.
And I also feel like it is a sexist thing as well. I feel like 100%. It's way more on women than it is on men, unless you're a professional athlete and your body is part of your job.
Mm.
And that's the only time I've met people like where men, for example, are as aware of where their body is at health wise. But it's coming more, I think, when you're an athlete, it's coming more from a performance health perspective than it is from a physical, how do you look appearance.
And do you feel like you were able to move it into that kind of a space of
health.
I do, where it's my mental well-being, it's my health,
absolutely,
and I'm out of the kind of
I am so against extreme diets. I am so against diet pills or anything like that. And I've actually been asked so many times to front those kind of things, and I've always said no because I really, really think it's not a good thing. For me, when I started, you know, really kind of falling in love with yoga, and I had always kind of been fit-ish, but yoga and kind of the mental clarity that I got with that, the better I got with that, the fitter I got with that, the more I could work out in other areas. So like I had like more strength, more kind of whatever. And I find now if I don't get my little workout in.
You notice a difference.
Oh, absolutely. I notice a massive difference. Just like clears my mind, clears my head. I can think clearer.
Yeah.
I feel better in myself. It doesn't necessarily have to be like the most extreme workout. It's just even like a walk.
Yeah.
Getting outside, fresh air, get the blood flowing.
Yeah.
It just like makes you feel better.
Yeah.
And I feel like I'm looking after the body I live in.
Yeah.
And I think that's where it comes from, not so much I need to be this size.
Yeah, so it's actually you're meshed back in with your body rather than like your body being over there in your head and you're like fighting with your body.
Yeah, which is what I was experiencing when people 100%. Would ask about what know, what's it like to be living in the body when you've put on weight?
Just lastly, when Wyatt was born, you just touched on it there a minute ago. Did that bring up a lot of stuff that you maybe didn't know would, or how was that like becoming a mum yourself and then just coming to terms with your own relationship with your mum and her being gone? Or
there's definitely moments where I'm like, oh my god, I'm don't know how this happened, or oh, I can understand maybe the decisions that were made at the time. But I have to say Wyatt like has been just a dream. Like it doesn't really like I can only really focus on my life with her now and make it the best that it can be. And I think actually if anything it's affected my life in a the future looks so good because she's in it. Do you know what I mean? It's
totally,
like every day
I
can't wait to see her, I can't wait to hang out with her, I can't wait to you know wake up and have her there and see what new things she's doing and what things she's learned, and she changes every single day. So she is, and I actually think she's had that effect on my whole family. You know, she's given a sense of purpose for all of us now. You know, she's the first baby in years and years and years in my family. So the only thing is that now I'm like, no, she has to go through all the pain and hurt. No, like, please, please, like, never leave mama, live with me forever. Like, literally, we joke all the time. They're like, oh, that, you know, she's so like this. And do you think where is she going? I'm like, she's never leaving me ever. She's living with me forever.
Sarah said to me a while ago, will you help me raise my baby? When I was like,
absolutely
will. You can live here with your baby.
Yeah, 100%. No, 100%. Literally, that's exactly how I feel. Like the idea of her going out into the world so new and so unaffected and untouched is like so pure and scary at the same time.
I know.
You know?
I know.
It makes me see the world actually again. in another way, seeing like her awe of things and you know.
I know. When they see things for the first time. Last night, so Sarah's sick and she was sleeping in my bed and it's at the front of the house and the, you know, when a car goes by.
Yeah.
The lights flash and it happened and she was like, "What was that, mommy?"
Yeah.
It's like, that's mad. This is the first time. She's tiny thing. Yeah. And when you're like, you know, I haven't had that in ages because she's five. So she's kind of, not that she's seen the world.
Yeah.
But just those little things where you're like, she's old enough to kind of go, what is that? Whereas when they're babies, it was amazing.
She's never seen something like that before.
This is her first time seeing that.
I know. Yeah. So I do have that experience all the time. Yeah. But now I'm like, you know, I actually kind of feel like I appreciate stuff now.
Yeah. Yeah.
Even more so because I get to see the like wonder of her, you know, and what she's going through and her experience. And I just hope she's a happy, content baby. And that's like literally all all the other stuff and, you know, being fulfilled myself and work and working on projects that I really want to do and looking after myself. But like she is the priority in both of our lives, you know. So it's a really magical new beginning when you become a parent, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like it's so hard.
Yeah.
It's the toughest job in the world. Mm. Like I really feel like I hate judgment being made on other mothers. And I'm like, look, you do you. You know, formula, breastfed, whatever. Nappies, reusable, whatever it is, do whatever you want. Like whatever suits your family, you do, because it is a tough job. But it's like the most, it's just like it. Do you know what it is? It's just, it's like what life is really about, like human instinct, having that baby. Don't you feel like you're like, this is human, this is why we're here in the world, not this other stuff going on, you know?
Totally.
Yeah.
Nadia, thank you so much.
Well, thank you.